What Does She Know Anyway, the podcast where we are your hosts, Nay and Shan, and we created the show not because we know everything, but because we do know education, sports, politics, culture, and finance. And when we're not the experts, we certainly know how to reach them. We have accomplished professors, entrepreneurs, city officials, athletes, and industry professionals, and they share their knowledge throughout the community and right here on What Does She Know Anyway. Now, this is our first show of our second season, and so we are happy that you are here with us. Now, let's get this party started.
Is Dr. John Williams III. Dr. Williams is an assistant professor of multicultural education at Texas A&M University. He's a proud graduate of the University of Illinois and the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, which is where he obtained his PhD. Dr. Williams has presented at several conferences, has written 34 articles, 6 book chapters, and a book. He secured over $3 million in grant funding and is the current director of ULTRA, Urban Lab for Transformative Research and Assessment. Dr. Williams' research area is school discipline, and we thought he would be a great guest to have on to discuss how the changes in diversity, equity, and inclusion programs across the country affect our school districts, teachers, and students. Dr. Williams, thank you so much for joining us on What Does She Know Anyway?
Clap, clap,
thank
clap,
you for
clap,
having
clap
me.
It up. Yeah.
Right. Clap, clap, clap. So let's hop right into it. So the first question we want to ask you is, like, what made you decide to get your PhD and how did you pick your area of research?
Good first question. I will say when it comes to the PhD, just give a little background on myself. Hometown, East St. Louis, Illinois. My father was a teacher. My mom taught at, like, you know, a community college. My aunt won teacher of the year, and have another teacher, another uncle who's been a teacher, another aunt who's been a superintendent. So literally education, like, ran in my family to a certain extent. But when I went to college, I knew I did not want to be a teacher. And it wasn't the fact that I didn't like teachers. I have two great teachers that, you know, I would say at the K-12 level, Mrs. McGinnis, shout out, and Mr. Dave Westhouse, who was my art teacher in high school. So I knew what made great teachers. I knew what inspired me to be a teacher. But it came to me early on that said, you know, I don't want to be a teacher. I know how to teach. Done plenty of positions outside of K-12 that involved K-12 that worked with teaching the youth, but I want to make teachers. Like, I want to be the person that drives why teachers want to stay in the profession and why they want to get into profession, and ultimately how they want to change students' lives similar to mine when I was growing up. So like I said, did my undergraduate at University of Illinois, did my master's at University of Illinois, got my MED there, so 2-time U of I graduate. But I wanted something different when it came to my PhD, because I knew early on I wanted to get a PhD. Like, once I seen doctors at the University of Illinois, and there's numerous ones that I've interacted with in class, numerous ones that I've dealt with in the College of Education, College of Health, particularly Black faculty who were professors that are like, you know what? I want that life. I like that life. I like the flexibility, but I like the ability to engage people and change people through research. I mean, I love the practitioner side of teaching and actually working with youth, but that was kind of like my end game, so to speak. So eventually, you know, I worked numerous jobs. Like I said, I ended up having a job where I worked in the St. Louis Detention Center. So when they talk about the school to prison pipeline, I've been at the back of the pipe. So as I started to have conversations, and basically every single day, I'm seeing the same kids come in. Now, mind you, we're in a detention center. And yeah, these kids are committed allegedly, because they weren't found guilty yet, committed a specific crime. I was noticing that the same kids that everyone was complaining about in the detention center, not all of them were giving us problems. And as I interacted with some of these individuals and had conversations, I began to realize that most of the issues didn't come from them. It came from their schools. Like, they don't get the kids don't get to choose their schools. They don't get to choose the communities they live in. So the best way to fix a pipe is go up to the top, go to the source. So that's what inspired me to say, you know what, let me give this thing a try. You don't make a shot you don't take. So I took a shot at University of North Carolina, Charlotte. And it was a hot, long move, 12-hour drive from St. Louis. But it ended up being one of the best things that ever happened to me in a lifetime, because it gave me the opportunity to come in with the ground running. And the faculty there, particularly, I wanted to do something that was urban ed. I grew up in urban areas. University of Illinois, most people know it's urban. They can call it what you may. It has the same characteristics of Chicago, just at a smaller scale. And I think that's what people don't actually realize, is that urban is often given a bad rap, but it's also the possibilities that can happen in urban areas don't happen everywhere else. Per the last census, 80% of our country is in an urban area or around it. So that's the majority. So everyone's dealing with urban ed to a certain extent. So for me, when I went to grad school, like I said, I had phenomenal professors that, you know, I saw what they were doing, and they mentored me in a certain capacity that I was like, oh, okay, that lifestyle I want to do. Teach me how to do this. And often early on, I mean, we were interacting with people that at the time I didn't know it, but I got to recognize it quick that these individuals were heavyweights in what I would say academic research. They knew how to do research, and which doesn't happen too often. I was surrounded by faculty, Black faculty, who were at the top of their game. So it wasn't as simple of, well, yes, I have faculty who don't look like me who are at the top of the game. I could see somebody. And as they say, you know, representation matters. You need quality representation. You just don't want everybody at the table. So for me, it's high quality representation matters, because that's how you move the needle. So individuals like Better A. Butler, Chance Lewis, Greg Wiggin, Tia Starker Glass, Stephen Hancock, Charles Hutchinson. I mean, I could go down a list of individuals. But yeah, I mean, because honestly, these are the people who drove what I was doing. But also, I had faculty who didn't look like me. Jehu Lim, Paul Fitchett, Dr. Laura Hart, and Kat. Like, I could go down a list of, like, I was literally sitting in a pool of greatness. So for me, what I needed to figure out was, what did I want to be when I grew up? And I was challenged very on that, hey, if you want to sit at the top of the shelf, you gotta pay the cost to be the boss. So for me, it was going to a research one institution, which means I needed to do research and have a clear line of research of what my research was and why it was different from everybody else's, and to produce high quality research. So it's not as simple as, I'm just going to talk about something, but really take the skills and the trades that everybody has produced prior to then and says, how can I do this in a way that makes me unique from any other researcher that's out there, while using some of the same skills and tool set? So again, I came in with the school to prison pipeline and the school discipline. So for me, that was my jam. That was my peanut butter and jelly. Everything spins off of that. That is the main attraction, because ultimately, no content area, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, social studies, literacy, none of that matters if you can't manage school discipline in the school. Doesn't. I don't care what type of ideas you think you're going to teach these kids. If you don't know how to do school discipline from a proactive stance rather than a reactive stance, or manage classrooms from a culturally responsive lens, the children just won't learn. I take this in point, and I use this very clearly. One of my positions, I worked in the TRIO program, talent search there at U of I. And one summer, one of me and my colleagues, we were tasked with some of the, as they say, bad kids, and I don't really believe in bad kids, from Unit 4. And they gave us a whole room of kids to work with. Interesting enough, these same kids that were bad, we had no issues out of. The entire summer, every single day, no issues. We may have to pull one student to the side. And I firmly believe that oftentimes what schools need is a different approach to some of the things that they're doing, and to stick with it with fidelity, because kids are growing. They're going to make mistakes. But how do we present schools as a practice facility, understanding that, guess what, the different cultures that come into a school, they're not always the same of what the school is. So the school has to shift based on the community, because the community, wow, does it say, they should be benefiting from the school just like the school's benefited from the community. So for me, I really wanted to be a research one institution, and I wanted to do research, particularly as a Black man, because we don't have that many Black man professors out there who knew how to do quantitative analysis and qualitative. So that was my drive to say, you know what, let me do something. And not do it better, but take what I've learned and take it to the next level. So that way I can put a spin on school discipline that other individuals may or may not be looking at.
Wow. Listen up. So I was just reading this article in Education Week, and it was discussing, you know, Black teachers and why more Black students don't want to become teachers. And you talked about representation and quality representation being important, and how I label myself as an educator, and I had quality Black women who were teachers and who were educators from the very beginning of my academic career. But you're right, I knew that I was not supposed to be a teacher. I knew that that wasn't my lane, but this is what they're saying. It's like, I know a lot of teachers, and I've talked with teachers of color and Indigenous teachers, and they're like, we don't have a say-so in our curriculum. We can't teach what we want or how we want. And we have a lot of observations with our administration. So it's not like they can get any type of leeway. This is from a student. And so I think that's what made me not want to be a teacher. I'd rather be one to change that policy or change that curriculum. So much like you and I, like, we have a lot of people who want to kind of change the game, but then we're kind of leaving that gap of who are going to be in the class, who's going to be in the classroom. So what are some encouraging words, or like, what are some things that we can do to encourage more students to have that courage to withstand these students from a day to day?
So here's, I'll flip it on the head. So, because often, and I had had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a couple of doc students, and the conversation was particularly, you know, how do we get more Black male teachers? Black male teachers exist as 2% of the total teacher population. As of a couple of years ago, they were 1%. So there's tons of research out there that saying we need more Black teachers. And like this, I got an article that says we need more Black teachers, but there's a caveat to that. I don't need more Black teachers to come into the mess that Black teachers didn't make. Mm-hmm. So when you say you need more Black teachers, did you fix the conditions that broke the Black teacher pipeline in the first place? Mm-hmm. So we could take that. We could go numerous ways. Brown versus Board of Education eradicated Black teachers. You've now underpaid Black teachers. So if we live in this what we call a patriarchal society, if a man's supposed to be making money, I'm dealing with Black males, and you're not paying them, why would they keep coming into this field?
Yes, exactly.
As you deal with teacher preparation, okay, representation matters. But I don't, the teacher education force, the folks who train teachers, that field mirrors what the teacher profession looks like. 80% mm-hmm. white women. So again, mm-hmm. I don't see myself. Thirdly, when Black male teachers, and the sisters too, I put Black women in there too, that when they get in these positions as teachers, they're not seen as content specialists. They're seen as, hey, you're the disciplinary. And I got research. Okay. Other people have research that you become, hey, you deal with the troubled Black kids. You deal with the troubled Latinx kids. Anybody else, we send them your way because you can work well with Tyrone. And it's just like, nah, anybody can work well with Tyrone. It's just you haven't taken the time. So it's like you often see particularly Black male educators enter the role of TA. They just an assistant. They enter the role of coach. They enter the role of band director. So it's like they're not seen as actual instructors. And when they do hit their instructor roles, like, well, guess what? You should be administration. So by the time they get great to be a teacher, they want to put them in the AP role. And typically APs handle discipline. They send them all the bad kids. So when we talk about needing more, as I would say, Black teachers overall, they need to recruit Black teachers just like they recruit athletes. This needs to start at elementary school. Man, you know what? I think you'd be a great teacher. You know, guess what? We got NIL deals. We need teacher NIL deals. Guess what? Your name and likeness, and if somebody takes this, you're going to have to cite me. But that's what it takes. If you want to repopulate the field, you need to start early.
I just wrote it down. So yeah. We're going to get money together. So yeah. The thing is,
why would I, if I'm getting disciplined all the time and the school is in a nice place, why would I want to be the one thing that got me in trouble all the time? Or, mm-hmm. and I think this is something that educators, particularly school administrators, teachers, everyone have to understand, communities are entering, they're sending their kids to schools not with a blank state. They know who some of these teachers are because they were there when they were there. So if Mrs. Such and Such didn't like me, I'm pretty sure when she finds out my kid is coming there, they're gonna not like my kid too.
It's pretty good.
So when I send my kid unknowingly to say, just go to school, or when I say, hey, guess what? Watch out with Mrs. Such and Such. She does this, 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 and this. I don't think she's changed. So already the child is coming in defensive because he knows, guess what? You don't even like my family. Or as we know, you know, people know everybody by their last name. So if you got a certain last name, you've already been biased versus you got certain good names, you walk on water. That's troublesome, but I don't think many educators take it into consideration when they're dealing with kids. That kids are coming with another set of history, you know, mm-hmm. outside of looking you up on social media. They got their family. If they've been there for a while, they know who you are and they know who your people are, which will make them apprehensive to say, hey, I want to engage or be even go into education.
Mm-hmm. That is so true, because where we grew up in Urbana, like the administrators and teachers that my mother had, we had some of them. So walking down the hallway, it was like, Reed, McFarland, whatever. But because we knew that they knew our folks and could, and that brought a certain level of respect to that person too, because we knew that person could go directly to our parents and have a conversation or tell on you, so to speak. So, but like you said, if that teacher started off crazy with my mom, then, you know, it would be like, watch out, because she may not be. And then, like you said, that creates the tension in the classrooms and it doesn't foster a good learning environment. Mm-hmm. So our next question, can you give us a brief description of what diversity, equity, and inclusion means? And what are the benefits? And I guess if there are any areas of opportunities with DEI, what would those be?
So that's a great question. Particularly the words diversity, equity, inclusion are like the boogeyman nowadays.
Right.
As numerous states, and I won't get into all the politics that have decided to say, hey, we don't need this anymore. When you look at diversity, and I'll kind of couch this, because this is another clapback that I'll have real quick. A lot of people do research and a lot of individuals, the reason why they say we need more teachers of color is because classrooms are becoming more diverse. That's not necessarily true. The truth of the matter is, if you go back to before the United States were colonized, this land was technically diverse. Hundreds of tribes have their own languages, their cultures, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. We can go for African countries, same difference. You can go for European countries. Everybody had their own thing. So culture, so diversity was out there. You kind of had it in different pockets. What diversity is, from my perspective, is us getting back to the original status quo. So when people talk about diversity of diverse thought, cultures, language, you know, interaction, things of that nature, the often thought is like, well, we're trying to get from this, what we would say, area where it was all white people. Now we need other people in. No, the original record was everyone was together doing their thing. Then it was colonized. Then people were segregated. And now we're trying to get back to original state. So it's like we're really, I mean, if you think it from a nature standpoint, you don't see animals segregating. No one's like, if we just take a whole Lion King perspective, what did he say? Everything you see mm-hmm. is the kingdom. They didn't say, hey, guess what? You know what? Scar and them, they hang out over here. They never come over. They came over. Now they made up some no good. But all the animals kind of interacted in their own fashion. And, you know, at the end of the day, we still have as a species to where, guess what? We interacted.
And if they were bad, it wasn't respected to species. Like hyenas and lions was bad.
Yeah, yeah. Like if you know you got one bad lion, we ain't kicking them all out. But the problem is it became that. So like this idea with diversity is providing what I would say it's resetting the clock. It's getting back to what we were originally. One in this particular land, in indigenous lands where cultures were interacting with each other. And it wasn't, I'm just going to subjugate one. When you look at equity is more centering justice. And a lot of people use the word social justice. I just use justice because you take the, like back when Martin Luther King and then we're doing that thing, there was no social justice. We just want justice. That's it. That's the bare bones of it. As you look at that, you center justice. What is correct, not right? Because multiple groups think they're right. What is the correct way to do this? And also, when you talk about equity, you have to repair past harms.
Yep.
That is one of the things, like, we have to repair past harms, because that's what's stopping us from getting over on certain things. That's what stops us from moving the needle and having very courageous conversations to get us forward as a human species, which, you know, last time I checked, every human on here belongs to that species, regardless of race, right, culture, gender, ethnicity. And then the last thing is, like, how do we prevent this thing from happening again? How do we stop this thing from happening again? Because often we think of equity as like a past tense thing. It's like an evolving future tense thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
When you transition to inclusion, you just want to make sure, is everyone who could be in the room have the opportunity to be in the room? And when I say that, I don't say it for they just there they're in the room, but they don't get a say. It's not that they're on the table, but they on the menu. So how are they actually being included in the conversation, and are the correct voices being heard? That is what inclusion is. And inclusion has its limits. Like, everyone can't come to the birthday party. If you think infringe where the West Side you own, that's not inclusion. Inclusion is making sure the correct voices are being heard. So when you look at it from a, like, as they say, a DEI standpoint, it's an idea, a premise, and actions and strategic actions that address the current issues that we have based on historical factors, that then recognize the historical factors, fix the things that we have now, and figure out how do we move forward to prevent these things from happening while including the correct parties in the room. That would be my nutshell with DEI. And if you take it from an education standpoint, it fits right nicely of how we should be educating students, not only to look at their classmates, their students, but DEI, diversity benefits everyone. Everyone in the room benefits when we have diverse minds in the room. Everyone grows from that. And even if you're taking it from a capitalistic model, which a lot of people don't, capitalism, one of the main things is they like competition.
But they listen up. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I had been following this entrepreneur from Detroit. Her name is Arian Simone. And she turned into this venture capitalist, and her fund is Fearless Fund. And she's being sued. And this is kind of... It's mind-boggling, because she kind of had a little bit of a win, but then the courts in Georgia ruled against her or held it up in favor. So the Fearless Fund and others like it were built to close gaps between white business owners and owners of color. And Bloom's lawsuit said that the Fearless Fund's Strivers Grant contest violates the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which prohibits racial discrimination in contracts. And he told NBC News in an email that racial disparities in funding don't justify the exclusion of certain men and women from public programs by race or ethnicity. But when you have 90 plus percent, even that's too much, percent of money going to white men and funneled around white men, why can't this Black woman raise funds for other Black women or women in color? And not even specifically, she's raised money for multiple entrepreneurs, men and women of all races and creeds, but she just has funds specifically for Black women, but they're ruling that unconstitutional. And it says the American Alliance for Equal Rights believes it is legally permissible to provide benefits to businesses and individuals who are under-resourced, but those benefits must be available to all races and ethnicities. So it's like we need to level the playing field, but who's responsible? Who's responsible for that?
So I'm gonna flip that one on its head. I don't think the goal should be leveling the playing field. It should be creating a whole nother field,
which is what she was trying to do in this case. Actually came off of the affirmative action being struck down from the Supreme Court, and the person who took the Fearless Fund to court, he was part of the group that brought up the affirmative action to the Supreme Court and struck it down. And then his next step was going after the Fearless Fund and other funds that target.
I will say this. the interesting thing about, I would call the rollback playbook, is that the playbook isn't new.
Right.
The playbook isn't new. It's not new. This arc towards justice is not one that will ever be done. So it requires that people kind of gird themselves up, fortitude themselves up, because it's always going to be something to take out what you're doing. That's how you know you're doing great work, when they got to take you to court to take you down, which means they've been watching you for a while. So for me, I would say this for anybody listening to this show who is trying to do equity type work. What did you call equity work before they called it equity work? What did you call social justice before you called it social justice? What did we do when we didn't have words for these things? Oh, guess what? We didn't say these words out loud, because there's a certain discourse of people and how they operate where, guess what? Things get done, you just never hear about it. It won't show up in a court briefing. It won't show up in a lawsuit, because guess what? It's staying 10 steps ahead at all times. It's kind of back to the proverbial thing, you got to be 2 times better. I think it's more like you got to be 10 times better. So by the time whatever catches up, the rollback catches up, they're not catching up to you in 2023. They're catching up to what you did in 2010, 2013. It's like, oh, well, we tried it. Well, sorry, apparatus changed. So I think that's the model that, you know, collectively individuals who are looking to do this work have to be on. There's a point of us where we have to move in silence. And when we emerge, and then we go back in silence again, so we can't figure it out. So for this individual who has this fund, there are other individuals who are watching you who are looking to support you. They will because of this incident, so they will be ready to come up and say, hey, guess what? I see what you did. Let's go ahead. Let's take this. Can we partner with you to take this?
We're an ally. Sure.
Or as I call them, instigators. Like, you allies, like, I'm with you. Instigator, like, I'm going to stir some things up for you. You could just sit in the back. I got this.
Well, she on the front line, you know. She got attorney crime put her. And we got our prayers with her. So, all right, let's go. Next question.
And our last question for you. What are some resources that we can give to parents to make sure their children are being treated fairly and not subjected to unwarranted discipline?
All right, so this is gonna be a push. This is gonna be a flip on the head. First thing I need parents to do as far as a resource is, I need you to parent your kids, period. And some folks listen to this, I'm like, he coming down. Look, I got 2 daughters. So I didn't been through multiple school systems. I get it. You know, they weren't always the best kid per se, but I parented my children. One parent, 2 parent, 3 parent, don't matter. Village, grandparent, parent the kids. Also, prepare your children to go to school. Mm-hmm. And I don't, like, back in the day, we did that, whether you went to an all-black school, a diverse school, the segregated school, all-white school. Prepare your children to go to school. Actually talk to them what it means to go to school. And I'm not saying to act silent and behave all the time, but there's a time and a place for everything. And some people listening is going to say, well, Dr. Williams, you know, it's just primarily white teachers and they got a white teacher way to do it. Okay, I get that. However, there's parameters to this. You can still have your son or daughter's authentic self be out there while still playing in the parameters of this game we call education. It's no different than no one's playing basketball on the football court. No one's coming to the football field and saying, hey, guess what? What you mean you're not letting me dribble basketball here? No, it's a football field. So understand that. 2, teach your children how to understand that school is a business. It is a business. You are here to produce. Yes, you get your little friends, you'll have those. But the ultimate goal for your child going to school is to surpass you. That is your responsibility as a parent. That as they go up, they're blowing you out the water, and you were their biggest cheerleader. So that's, I would say that. And 2, parents, when you go to schools, also know that because you come into your child's business, you need to dress and act like you come into a business. you need to understand the rules and responsibilities at the school, who to talk to, what is the chain of command, who do you go to for XYZ, because as you come into these schools and you know that gives you the advantage. The student code of conduct policy, sometimes they don't even do paper anymore. Send it to your email. Read it. You got to sign off on it, read it, know what the policies are, know what the expectations of your child. Two, reach out to your child's teacher. Soon as you know, reach out. Be the first one. It's going to scare these teachers. I already know. Someone's going to be freaked out. But as I tell the teachers that I educate, I tell them the first thing you need to tell these parents is, I'm not your enemy. I'm here to partner with you, with your child, to get them the best place they need to be. So parents, you got to come in equipped knowing, hey, what does Mrs. Such and Such do? How does she like her assignments? Everything. And every day you should be checking in with your kids. Every day. Mm-hmm. Not know you get up to the room, disappear. I don't care if you've been gone all night. You work second shift, third shift. Again, I've been there. I understand. I've been second shift, night shift, first shift, working 24 hours. Got it. You still have to make time to show that your children that education is important. And not to say that parents don't, but we all need a swift kick in the butt sometimes to say, hey, stay on it, stay with it. When it comes to your school, you need to know the key players by name. You need to know the principal by name. They should see you come by every once in a while. You need to know the assistant principals by name. A key phrase, the assistant principals handle discipline. So when you call the principal, talk about they kicked my child out, that ain't the person you need to call. You need to talk to the teacher first, then you go to the assistant principal. Also, within knowing the key players, I would really say to form a network of other parents, because everybody kind of knows whose kid's going to the school. And you all work together. It's okay to ask questions. I don't know this. I don't know that. You know, I want my kid to go college. I don't know how. Being an invested parent in children's education is a full-time job, because your children are relying on you to be stewards of their future. You have to know. You have to show up when you don't feel like showing up. And guess what? It's plenty of times I have not felt like showing up. But your kids will value it. They will remember. And if you can't show up physically, show up virtually. If you can't show up, send a friend. Call a cousin, call somebody. Hey, you know, such and such. Hey, little Timmy's in your class. I know you and Timmy, I mean, you know, your parent. Can I talk to your parent? Hey, you know, we've interacted a bunch of times at different functions. Can you go on behalf of me for my child to represent me? Because I know you do good work with your child. It takes that, because we all can't be there all at the same time for numerous reasons. But that's what I would say to parents. Know the policies. Don't ask a question that you don't know the answer to. And if you don't know it, go find somebody who can help you know it. That would be what I would tell parents as far as when it comes to discipline. And be willing to push back and understand that the pushback, when warranted, again, you got to have your ducks in a row. When warranted, you may have to go up the chain, all the way up the proper chain. But it's necessary to go up the proper chain, because if your child gets a suspension, an expulsion, any type of thing, it's on their record. Don't let them tell you it's not on their record. It's on their record and it sits. And if you want it off, you're going to have to fight for it to be off.
Okay. Those are great.
Talk about it.
Right?
Right. Talk about being an advocate for yourself and for your student. Popping up at the school, get to know the key players, ask questions, virtually show up. All these things are like kind of founded in communication, but it's really how you impart education and the importance in your children, right? Like making sure that they understand, no, I'm going to communicate with your teacher to figure out why you don't have homework, or if you do have homework, or if you're not getting the help that you say that you need, I'm going to talk to your teacher. I really am. It's no problem. And I want them to talk to me. All right. Well, Dr. John Williams, we really do appreciate you. We really do appreciate you. Yes, this is, like I said, the second season, first show. And give it up to Naya, for soliciting our guest here tonight.
Of course. We've been trying to figure out how to make this work out, and glad that we were able to get on your schedule, Dr. Williams.
I appreciate you all reaching out. Cool. It's an honor to be on the show. Shout out to second season. Shout out to more seasons for you all, as many seasons as you want. And again, anybody who's listening to the show, follow, like, subscribe, you know, figure out how you need to get in contact with these individuals.
Tell us how to find you.
Oh, so many socials, not all socials I put out there, because you know you don't want everybody finding you. So if you're really trying to find me, I'm on LinkedIn. You can look me up, John A. Williams III. I am on Twitter, X, whatever is going to be in the next couple of days. JW3PhD. You can like, subscribe, whatever. Find me on there. I usually communicate back pretty often. So if you like say something that's tweet worthy, I will come back to you and say, hey, how's it going? X, Y, and Z. And also Instagram with the same handle. Usually it's more pictures and things of that nature. But those are the easiest ways. And if you want to email me directly, is WE Consulting. So we consulting 30 at Gmail. So you can shoot me an email. Hey, Dr. Williams, I got a question. Is this parenting thing? Or school administrators, teachers. Hey, Dr. Williams, I see you were talking about teachers, administrators, things in the nature in the world of school discipline or retaining teachers. Shoot me an email. I will respond. I typically respond most of my emails 24 hours because I don't like waiting on people and I don't like people waiting on me.
So. All right. You said that's weconsulting30 at gmail.com. Yep,
you got it.
All right. And you can find us, the WDSKA podcast, on Apple, Spotify, Google platforms, soon on the airwaves locally to Champaign County. And you can also find us online, GoWDSKA. So more from Maya and Shan. Until next time, we are here to teach everyday citizens how to be a player in this game called life.
Deuces.